Hi, my name is Amanda Morehouse and I'm from Clearly Training. And over the next session, we're going to be looking at getting to grips with time management techniques for finance professionals. The way that I suggest that we do this is by looking at the five key characteristics of highly effective people and how we as accountants and finance professionals can use this to get better results by managing our time more effectively. But before I delve into this subject matter, I'd like you to do something. I'd like you to grab a pen and a piece of paper to enable you to write down some of the key points and to follow in to some of the exercises I'm going to suggest to you, because our time is precious and we want to get the best results, don't we? So let's start off by thinking about some of the individuals that we've perhaps worked for or worked with, and what made them so brilliant at producing excellent results, and what can we learn from them? And I'd like you to think of that person and think about what they said and the way that they behaved and what they looked like. And what techniques can we pick up from them? Because what we're going to be doing over the next session is not looking at brand new techniques, but actually just bringing into our conscious awareness some of the things that we already know are going to get us better results in managing our time. Now, from my experience and my observation, there's five key characteristics of highly effective people. And the first one, without a shadow of a doubt, is that they know their outcome. They know exactly what it is that they want to deliver. And they've created a clear vision and a clear message in their own mind, what that's going to look like and what that's going to sound like. And number two, they've got absolute confidence that they can deliver those results. They can break out of any limiting beliefs and deliver that particular result. Number three is that they implement massive action to get these massive results. They are action orientated. Number four is that they exhibit behavioral flexibility. And number five is that they have the ability to manage stress in stressful situations. They may not be the most academically brilliant of finance professionals, but they can manage the stress. So let's think about you and your situation. Why is it such a challenge now? In 2010, what are some of the challenges to finance professionals? And what I do, I sort of think back to when I was a child, and just to tell a little story about the days when we used to choose which television programs we were going to watch. And my mum used to send me for the Radio Times, and there was three channels, and it was very much a fixed choice. Now, when we're thinking about what we're going to watch on telly, we're really overloaded and bombarded with so much choice and information that it probably takes you twice as much time to decide what it is that you're going to watch and what you're not going to watch. And this is very true in business. We're drowning in options. We have too much information, and it's filtering through it all to decide what's important and what isn't. And also the pace of change is changing as well, as technology drives the speed of development. And if you work in large organisations, you know, don't you, that as new changes come in, before they have time to be embedded and executed and completed, the next project has started. So it's almost as though we're trying to catch up with ourselves, and the pressure is on, particularly for us as finance professionals. Okay, so there's a grim reality emerging here. Will there ever be enough time to cram in everything that you need to do? And is it really a case of doing less and deciding what we're not going to do rather than trying to cram more into that time? So let's have a look at these five key characteristics of highly effective people. We said that the first one was knowing your outcome. And this is your first challenge, to pick up that pen and actually to write down on a clear piece of paper what your purpose is and what is important to you. Where exactly do you want to be going over the next 12 months? And to be able to think on paper is one of the key characteristics that I find of successful people, because they can write it down and then they can communicate it. And if you can do that, if you can write things down on paper, this will enable you, when times get tough and when things get busy, to go back and to refocus and check that what you're delivering is aligned back to what you want. This is also a key strategy in coping with stress, because if you have clarity in what you want, it means that you're not going to get sidetracked into delivering what other people want. And that's when we have those feelings of being out of control and really not doing the things that we want to do. Why am I asking you to do that? Because if we have clarity of what it is that we want to achieve, this enables us to cope and to be in control. And it's good to feel in control, isn't it? And maybe if you're out there and you're in a profession that is quite stressful, this is your first strategy in reducing that stress. Because if we know specifically what we want, we can then be in control of ensuring that everything we do between 9 and 6 o'clock at work is linked back and is aligned to those specific outcomes. So hopefully you've written down what it is that you want over the next 12 months. And if you can, to extend that timeline over 2 years and maybe 3 years. And I'm going to ask you to think about these 5 key areas. Which one is the most important to you? Number 1, is it your health? Number 2, is it your family and friends? Number 3, is it your own personal development and your ability to learn? Number 4, is it your career and your job? Or number 5, perhaps, is it leisure and holidays? And I'd like you to write these down on a piece of paper and to rank them in order. Because here what we're doing is creating a picture of where your values are, of what is really important to you. And I think for most finance professionals, it can come as a bit of a light bulb moment to realise that the career may not necessarily be at the top of the list. But if we were asked to think about what concerns us the most and what consumes our energy, maybe it's the career that's at the top. So continuing on this theme of what is really important to you and what results you want, I'm going to ask you next to take the outcomes from those exercises and to write down over the next 12 months, what does success look like? What are your key objectives and the key things that you want to deliver? And I don't just want you to think about the business and career objectives, but also in your personal life as well. Create a complete list, a complete picture written down on one piece of paper of everything that you want to achieve over the next 12 months. And again, when I've watched and observed, and you've probably done this too, that highly effective people that deliver great results are the ones that can A, write it down on a piece of paper, and secondly, communicate it with clarity and without any vagueness. And this list on paper, it's tangible. It's a reference point. And when times get hard, you can go back to this piece of paper and just re-remind yourself with confidence why you are in the role that you're in and why you're doing what you're doing. Okay, back to the characteristics of highly effective people. The second characteristic is this one of confidence and the ability to break out of limiting beliefs. I think it's important to understand why limiting beliefs are so significant for us to deliver the results that we need to deliver. And what I'm going to describe to you is effectively how the human brain works. Because you know, don't you, that through the eyes, the ears and the senses, we are bombarded by millions of bits of information every second. However, we are mechanically designed to filter out, to delete, distort and generalise all the information that is given to us every second of the day. And the way that the human brain works, it's almost like a filing system that works as a filtering system. And of the 2 million bits of information that we're bombarded with every second, only 134 bits gets through into that filing system. Now, what we choose to delete and what we choose to store is based on our beliefs and our attitudes and our values. So therefore, you can see, can't you, the rationale behind why attitude is so significant. If we believe that we are confident, we will gather in evidence, supporting evidence for that belief that we are confident. And you may have heard people at work that have a belief or an attitude that change is a bad thing. So what you will hear in the office is every bit of evidence to support their belief that change is a bad thing. You know them, don't you? I'm sure you do. So for us personally, we have a choice. Do we want to have results or do we want to have excuses? If we want results, then we have to believe that the outcome that we're wanting to achieve is completely achievable. And if we truly believe that and we can convince ourselves, then what we will do is gather in evidence to support that belief, because that's what confident people do and that's what highly effective people do. So who is driving your bus? Who is driving your mind? And are you going to decide right now to believe that you can deliver these things or not? The choice is yours. Okay, on this journey of looking and learning from the characteristics of highly effective people, number three is that they exhibit massive action. And what I'm going to do, I'm just going to tell you a story about somebody I met for real who worked in a finance department. His name is Rob, to protect the innocent. And Rob was a management accountant. He came to work for me. And to start off with, very enthusiastic and very energetic and very much wanting to please. And with Rob, in his current role, I asked him to do something very specific. I asked him to look at the debt situation and to identify over a four-week period the debt that could be collected and to tell me at the end of the month the debt that was effectively uncollectible. And that being the situation, at the end of the month, my intention was to refocus him on the collection of the collectible debt and to draw a line under the uncollectible debt. And Rob, being hardworking and conscientious, he worked very busily over that four-week period and came back to me. And he said, this is the controllable debt and this is what I believe that we can collect. In fact, he told me that all of it was collectible, because he was hardworking and conscientious. And as the months went on, even though I'd said to him very specifically, I want you to tell me the uncollectible debt, he continued to work harder and harder to try and collect it. And what this meant was that Rob started coming in early into the office and working later in the evening. So when I came into the office in the morning, I'd see him sat at his desk, eating his breakfast, drinking his coffee, and perhaps trawling the internet and answering his emails. And as he continued to work on the debt that obviously couldn't be collected, I found that the people around him were starting to get a little bit irritated, because with him focusing on the things that weren't necessarily of high value, it meant that he gathered a reputation for getting distracted. And if he was distracted, it meant that as being a management accountant, he couldn't give his information to the other people in the team on time. And the result of this, and you've probably seen it in your own office, is that people kept ringing him up and kept going to his desk to check that he was online with his deadlines. And being hardworking and conscientious, he always gave them a positive answer. However, when it came to a delivery, he gathered a reputation for leaving things to the last minute. But being hardworking and conscientious, he really wanted to please. However, Rob, to me, resulted in delivering work that was late, of a poor quality because he left things to the last minute. And what he created in himself was a stressful situation, and he emanated a stress to the rest of the team. Now, for Rob, he was studying for his final exams. And I've told you, haven't I, that he was coming into work early and he was leaving late, which left very little time for studying for his accountancy exams. The result was, and you can probably guess this, that Rob didn't pass his exams, and when promotion came available, he went for that promotion and he didn't get it. And as a result, in stressful situations, he ended up saying he was going to resign, of which he did. And you know, don't you, in recruiting new people, is it necessarily the people that are busy and hardworking and conscientious, or is it the people that can deliver results? Now, this story of Rob, it's a good story that we can learn from, because he exhibited characteristics of procrastination. He could have done, he should have done, he would have done, but he didn't. And he's completely the opposite of highly effective people, because highly effective people deliver results through massive, specific, aligned action. And this is what we're going to look at in this section. So my first tip to you in exhibiting massive action is to be completely focused and completely aligned onto those specific results that you defined in the first session. So what is it that you want, and how does that translate into what you need to achieve and deliver on a monthly basis? Then that monthly list of things to do needs to be translated into what needs to be achieved on a weekly basis. And then that needs to be aligned to how that needs to be delivered on a daily basis. And then, yes, I'm going to be asking you to think on an hour-by-hour basis in what you do at work. How is that aligned to you getting specifically what you want? This is controlled decision-making. Controlled as in you have the power to decide what you're going to choose to do and what you're not going to do. Because when we look at these highly effective people, they have not only that clear vision, but they can clearly link their long-term goals to what they're doing on a day-by-day and an hour-by-hour basis. And this is what gives them the confidence to say no to some things that land on your desk. The second thing that I'm going to ask you to do, and this is through many years of observing and running courses on time management, lots of people come to me and they say, yes, I do a to-do list, but I never get to the bottom of the to-do list. Well, I'd like you to take it one step further to have this massive action. I want you to do that to-do list. And first of all, I want you to think and ask yourself the question, how do these things contribute to what it is that I want? The second thing with that to-do list is to chunk it into, when am I going to do this in the day? Most people have meeting schedules or things that already consume and eat away into the day. And if you have a look at what time you've got available, maybe it's only time that is 3 or 4 hours out of a whole working day. So take that to-do list and translate it into the time chunks of when. Now, why am I asking you to do this? Because again, this gives you the confidence to focus on one thing in a time slot, rather than trying to keep many balls in the air and think about many things. Focus is everything. The third thing in this section is that of priority. And I'm always telling my husband that I have the right to be first. And that's what priority is. Being earlier or more important and having the right to be first. And we know, don't we, in choosing which is the most important thing will help you focus on delivering those specific results. Okay, the next thing that I'd like to talk about is that of priority. We hear it a lot in business and particularly as finance professionals, but what specifically does it mean? And I'm always talking to my husband that I am his number one priority. And he laughs back at me, but priority is the right to be first. The right to be first in that it's the most important. And for us as finance professionals, in being able to decide what has the right to be first, it's got to be aligned to what it is that we want to deliver, what our results are. Now, for me, as a finance professional, I find all the time that there's choices to be made over what is going to come first and what's going to go to the bottom of the list. And a few years ago, I experienced priority making in its extreme. One of the first professions to do it was the medical profession, and they called it triage. And before the Napoleonic Wars, for example, if you were injured, it was a first come, first served basis. And of course, that can't work in medicine, can it? And as my little daughter, who was two at the time, got her finger stuck in the video recorder, and I had to get the fire brigade to come out to take her fingers out of the video recorder, they sent me down to A&E. And most of you will have been at A&E at some point in your life, particularly if you've got children. And the first port of call in an A&E department is the triage nurse. And the triage nurse is effectively there. Their sole purpose is to prioritise cases, to decide who is going to go and see the doctor first and who has to wait. So, what can we learn from the triage? For us as finance professionals, we have to make a conscious decision of what's going to come first, what's going to come last, and what we're not going to do at any point whatsoever. We have to be able to prioritise. So looking at that to-do list, which ones can you immediately take off that list? Which can you stop? And which are effectively not aligned to the results that you want to deliver? Now, most finance professionals say to me that the biggest challenge is that of managing distractions. So which distractions are going to take you away from delivering your results? Some of the distractions that finance professionals talk to me about is distractions from email, distractions from what actually you can see at your desk, and also the distractions from people coming up to your desk and asking and requesting different things of you. And let's just boil this down, because being busy and hardworking and conscientious, just like Rob, doesn't mean that you are going to be effective. And as finance professionals, are we valued on the results that we deliver or on the ability to look busy and hardworking? Now, let's have a look at these distractions. Number one, email. Now, most accountants and finance professionals say to me that they keep their email open for the whole working day. And I ask them the question, why? How do you use email and how does it help you? Because email should be just a tool to enable you to produce the results that you want to deliver. However, there is a need, a human need, to feel as though we're wanted and we're needed and to be able to respond quickly. However, if email is used in this way, it means, and you know, if you saw yourself in the office, that you'd be stopping what you're doing, getting focused on an email, getting distracted, and then going back to what it was that you were doing in the first place. And most people receive significant numbers of emails a day, which result in every 5 or 10 minutes, the stop, start, pick it up. Stop, start, pick it up. And for you as a finance professional, is that the most effective way for you to be managing your time? Who is in control? Is the email controlling you, or are you controlling the email? So what I'd like you to think about doing is writing down that perhaps there's one change you can make as a result of this podcast, is to take control of your email and to look at it, yes, and to respond to it, yes, but only 3 times a day, once in the morning and at lunchtime and around mid-afternoon. And it's amazing how you can very effectively, if you choose to and you decide to, you can take control of that key distraction. The second key distraction is your actual desk. And if you are at work at the moment, just look around you, because a desk is almost like a visual distraction. If you feel that you are surrounded by things, unnecessary things, such as folders and files and post-its and pictures, every one of them is trying to grab your attention. And a great analogy for this in managing your time is, for example, when you go shopping. And most of you will have shopped at some point in a supermarket. And I reckon if you go in to a supermarket without a specific list, a specific to-do list, as you walk up and down the aisles and you smell the food and you see all the different labels, you effectively get distracted and you end up buying things that you never intended to buy when you first moved into the supermarket. That's right, isn't it? We've all done it. We've all got to the checkout and thought, why have I got all these things in my trolley? And that's effectively what your desk is doing. If it is cluttered, if it has too many things there, they are all visual distractions asking or maybe demanding that you spend time thinking about them. So my second thing with managing distractions is to clear that desk and take away all the unnecessary distractions that you've got on there. And the third, finance professionals, tell me that the third biggest distraction is people. People either phoning up or coming to the desk or in meetings asking for you to do things. Now, what I'm going to encourage you to do is to not say yes to everything. We all want to help and we all want to feel needed. However, producing the results that are important to us is significant if we want to manage stress. So rather than saying yes, I'd like to encourage you to ask the questions of why do you need that and how soon do you need that, and to manage their expectation. Maybe if we said no to them, the response wouldn't be that positive. But to agree to do something and to define when it's realistic to do it is professional, and it also shows a sign of confidence. Okay, so time management techniques. You might be feeling at the moment that what I've been talking about so far is not about getting more out of your time, but is more about having the confidence to do less and to stop doing some things. And that's exactly the case. Okay, the fourth characteristic of highly effective people and what we can learn from them in time management techniques is that of behavioural flexibility. These highly effective people have the canny knack of engaging people and enabling them to trust them and want to be motivated by them to deliver these specific results. So for us as finance professionals, we've got to be great at preparing relationships. And in thinking about our time, how much time do you make available for building trust and rapport with your colleagues and perhaps the stakeholders within your organisation? Rapport is basically enabling others to feel that they can trust you and that they can be open to your suggestions. And the two things that I would suggest in building these relationships is the first one is to see the world through their eyes. What is it that is really important to them? What is it that they need? And how can we show that we can listen and understand and link what we need from them with what it is that they want? The second is that businesses are run by people. It is people that makes decisions. It is people that make change. So how much of your time as a finance professional is spent building those relationships of trust, knowing if we want to make some changes, then we've got to engage with the people around us. Okay, point number five, ability to manage stress and stressful situations. Highly effective people, not necessarily the most intellectual or have the highest academic qualifications. However, they have an ability to manage stress. So what is stress? It's what you experience when you perceive you cannot cope effectively with a threatening situation. And the key word there is perception. You know, don't you, that you can put two individuals in the same role, in the same environment. One individual will cope brilliantly well. The other one will find it very difficult to cope. So perceptions are everything. And this is, again, when we go back to how the brain works and what your belief is. If your belief is that you can do this and you can do it confidently, the brain will automatically take in information to support that belief. If you believe that you cannot cope and there are things out there that are going to put you at risk, then you will collect information to support that belief. Positive thinking and a positive outlook are the first, perhaps the most important strategy in managing stress. If you are suffering from stressful situations and suffering from stress, then there are some things that you can take positive action. And what this involves is taking action where you can feel in control of your results and feel in control of the environment around you. Number one is to take the time to relax, be calm, and peaceful. And in an office, this can pose its challenges. But how many people in finance actually sit and eat their lunch and their breakfast at their desk and don't have the confidence to move away from the desk and to seek refreshment and just a place to re-energize yourself? And what I'd be suggesting to you is to find those places where you can feel re-energized so you can cope with the pressures and the risks that are given to you as finance professionals. And that's it for now. Thank you for listening to this AAT podcast. It's been Amanda Morehouse from Clearly Training. And I hope you, as a result of this podcast, have been able to make some positive changes in your ability to manage time. Thank you.